That was incredible.
Still like shaking from excitement and like just disbelief that we've just visited Vaughan Butler.
I know, guys, you are in for such a treat. We've been talking about this for so long. I think it was one of our first posts that we used on Instagram was Dawn Butler's face. We were saying, we're about to interview Dawn Butler. We are so excited. But we had some technical difficulties on our ends. We had to basically push this back. So this is the highlight. I don't know about Paris, but this is literally the highlight of 2021 so far.
Absolutely. And it's really given us an appetite to really continue this important work that we're doing, hasn't it? Because just seeing how Dawn has navigated through kind of empowering women, fighting for racial equality and just community. And so that's really made us feel even more, especially in the new year, because you come in the new year, you're like, oh my God, you know.
It's been a tough one.
And I think we've got a lot more to do. So yeah, really looking forward to kind of engaging more with Dawn.
Definitely. So guys, you're in for a treat. I hope you enjoy this episode with Dawn Butler.
Hello everyone, and welcome to The Feminist Lens, a podcast production by Women for Wanawake. So today we have a very exciting and special guest, Dawn Butler, Labour MP for Brent Central. We are so excited to have you, Dawn, here. I mean, we've been really looking forward to speaking with you and picking your brain about women's rights, racism, and your career in politics. You have really inspired so many people, definitely Nina and I, just by the work that you've done, how resilient you are. You're so graceful, you're dignified, especially when you've gone through so much. So I guess we should just start off. I know our listeners will be really interested to hear more about you if they don't already know. About you. So can you just tell us a little bit about your journey and what inspired you to pursue a career in politics and advocating for women and fighting against racism as a Black woman in the UK?
It's a pleasure to join you guys on your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. So what started me off my journey? What makes me want to fight for women? Well, the fact is that I've got four brothers, right? And one sister, but I grew up with my brothers really, because my sister left home when I was 8 years old. She's 10 years older than me. And growing up around four brothers, they're very protective of me. But it also made me realize just how much more vocal and visible you have to be as a woman. And you know, just to be heard, you kind of have to be louder. You have to make more sense, because otherwise you are dismissed. And it's interesting, you know, how kind of they built my resilience in that regard. And then I think about, you know, Sojourner Truth was one of my kind of idols that I read about, and her poem, and she talked about Ain't I a Woman, and it just made, you know, you just think we are already stronger than our male counterparts in so many different ways, and yet still that's not recognized in society. Yeah. And so that's always who I've been, and so nothing's ever changed. It's just the platform has changed. And I've always used the platform, no matter where I am, whether it was at school, whether it's, you know, at college or at work, I've always sort of used my platform the same way. It's just that now I'm in politics.
And was it difficult? Coming up in politics, did you feel like you were a woman? I know that might sound like a bit of a stupid question, but could you see a different treatment against your male counterparts, and also being a Black woman? Like, could you feel that?
Every single day. And some days you expect it, and you know, a lot of days you're kind of aware of it, but it's the days that when you don't expect it, when you're almost off guard, when you've lowered your guard, and those are the days that it gets to you and you think, oh my God, we've got so far to go still. And those are kind of the hard days. And being a Black woman, you've got that extra layer. And what was hard about that in the beginning was actually the white women who almost ignored the fact that you're getting extra abuse or you're getting dismissed more because of the color of your skin. And you think, oh, I thought we were all in this together, you know, whether you are a black woman or whether you are a disabled woman or, you know, whether you're a working class woman with an accent, you know, I've always thought we were in it together. And I think as you go up through, you know, some circles, you realize that's not the case.
It's interesting you say that, Dawn, because it's very, very important to raise that, because there are lots of literature now that's being written about white feminism. And it's really important to start like reading widely. I know myself, I am starting to unlearn a lot and learn. And I think at the end of the podcast, we'll put in the show notes some of the books that have been written by different women at the moment about white feminism, what it is, and how for so long many white feminists have, from the suffragettes to even some influencers online, do not kind of care or take the time or understanding about intersectionality and what that means. A term coined by, like, was it Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined that term about feminism, about race, culture, all the kind of different intersections about a woman's struggle. So yeah, it's really, really interesting and important to read up on that.
Yeah, it really is. And it's enlightening in everything that we do, right? I mean, I remember when I first heard the term intersectionality, I was like, oh, what's that? You know, this is some academic term. What does it mean? It's very difficult to say, you know, I'm never going to use that word. And then all of a sudden, you know, you kind of become more aware. And so you think, actually, it's a really good word. And then you learn how to say it without stuttering. And it's important. And even today, I was listening to an interview on TV, and somebody asked a guy if he had a wife and what his wife thinks about what he's doing. And this guy looked kind of uncomfortable, and I thought he could be gay, and so you've now made him feel uncomfortable. And so it's just being aware of difference and, you know, and accepting difference, really. It's just being aware of that. Mm-hmm. And so this is why I hate this campaign against the woke culture. I mean, I don't really even like the term woke, to be honest, but what it represents is important. And then this campaign against it is really quite interesting, because what's wrong with being a nice person? What's wrong with being considerate towards other people and other people's struggles and battles and fights and needs? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with using your privilege to help others? What on earth is wrong with that? I don't get it.
I think people have been moving for the last couple of years into a very individualistic way, and feeling like, you know, I'm just worried about my problems because I have so many problems and I can't deal with other people's problems. But what people don't realize is actually your neighbor's problems are your problems. We all affect each other in a way that we might not realize. And that, I think, comes across, you know, that comes from the rhetoric of some, you know, political leaders. And I think people just really need to kind of reflect and come together and come back to basics and understand that we are a community, whether someone looks like you or they don't look like you. But I don't know when that will be. I mean, I feel that during COVID, people have moved more together, but then that's been probably more like where you live, your community, which is not a bad thing, but I think we need to look at each other wherever we live as the same. So like a woman, what they'll go through in the UK will be the same as they'll be going through in Kenya or Jamaica or, you know, wherever you could be. So I think it's just understanding that we are all women and we're all the same, and understanding other people's struggles. But I think we've got a way to go, personally, without sounding pessimistic. Yeah.
I think, Paris, like following on what you were saying about political leaders, our next question for you, Dawn, is what has been your take on the outcome of the US election and the challenges we have seen with the acceptance of the result? Obviously, we've seen a bunch of, I would say, terrorists personally, storm the Capitol. And now the following on from that, the impeachment, which took place last night. And so what impact do you think the new administration, so Biden, Kamala administration, will have on women's rights and equality in America and across the world?
So I think that, I mean, they are domestic terrorists. That's exactly what they are. And, you know, they failed coup. I think it's a lesson to us all. I've done an article in the Metro today. It's a lesson to us all what happens when we follow this nationalist, individualistic kind of route and pander to the far right and white supremacy. This is kind of what happens, and history has taught us that. So we shouldn't really be surprised that this kind of thing can boil over. The only surprise is that it happened in 2020 when we thought we'd moved on from that. I think that we need to be aware of that, and aware of that here in the UK as well. So I think it's important that we take note of what's happened and what's happening. And, you know, we have our own problems here in the UK with the current government trying to deny that racism exists. And, you know, Thatcher was the one that kind of tried to destroy communities and try to get people just to think about themselves. But ultimately, we're not alone in this world. And this pandemic has taught us that we like other people. We like being around other people. You know, lockdown is very difficult for people because it's very self-isolating. And that's not who we are as humans. Mm. And, you know, Martin Luther King said, "I cannot be where I ought to be until you are where you ought to be." That is the intersectionality of reality. And that's the thing. We need each other to survive. And Trump is a lesson to us all. And we just have to learn that lesson and take it on board and fight very hard against it. And understand that some people, when they're close to being exposed, they're like a caged animal and they will fight as much as they can to keep the status quo. And so we have to be fully aware of that.
Yeah, that's true. And we have a quote in our Women for Wanawake where we say, you know, no one's equal until we're all equal. And that's something that we're trying to really push forward people to understand. Dawn, from your opinion, I mean, how do people start thinking that way? How do we change people's view? You know, because people think, well, I don't have a job, I don't have any money, I don't care about my neighbor down the road who has, so, or I have money, my neighbor doesn't, so I don't care whether they don't. Like, where, how do we move from that? What kind of message would you give to people to start thinking more holistically and in more of a community rather than individuals? Because it's a hard thing to change.
It is, but if you think about it in a simple term, like if your neighbor's not hungry, they won't want to steal your food.
Right.
You know, it's really, you know, it's really kind of as basic as that. You know, people saying, well, don't have kids if you can't feed them. Really? Is that the society that we are in?
It's like Dawn, you saw with the, obviously you'd been way more in tune than we are, but what's going on with the Conservative government right now and those pathetic, pathetic bundles or hampers they've been calling them. That was insane. That would never happen if the Labour, if Labour was in government.
Yeah, not at all. And you have to think about why people fought so hard for us not to have the government that we could have had. You know, the Labour government that we could have had, what that would have meant. And people say, well, what would you have done differently? Well, just read through the manifesto. It tells you, you know, the 2019 manifesto, the 2017 manifesto. It clearly outlines everything that we would do differently. But more important than that, it's funny that in a crisis, everybody becomes a socialist. You know, all of a sudden it's important that people have access to the internet, that people have a laptop, that people have food, that people have electricity. You know, all of a sudden, all of those basics become fundamental and important. All of the people who serve us in a supermarket, they become essential workers, whereas before they were ignored. So it's funny how important people come and the kind of people who are important in the times of a crisis. And we have to think about that. And we have to think about what sort of society we want and what sort of society we want to grow.
Yeah, and speaking of basics, actually, this comes on nicely to our next question. We saw last year Scotland became the first nation to provide sanitary products to everybody. And we've seen the work that you've been doing to support such important campaigns, such as what the Free Periods campaign at the movement are doing. And I know that you've been campaigning about this for many, many years. How realistic do you think that would be for us to achieve that? Because I as a woman, that's a basic right as far as I'm concerned, and no one's going to tell me any different. I think it's actually disgusting that we have to go through that and we have to fight for, you know, basic provisions. So yeah, how realistic do you think that will be for us in the UK? And how are you going to continue trying to champion this work on the back of and working with, potentially, I don't know, I'm just guessing, with Scotland on this?
Yeah, Monica, and she was the Scottish parliamentarian, and I stole her bill basically and made it my own when I was the shadow minister. Such a good bill. And it's shocking, right, that some young women were unable to go to school because they're on their periods. And, you know, some mothers having to choose whether to, you know, whether to use the sanitary products for themselves or their child. You think, wow, is that really happening in our country? And I think one of the stark visualizations was when supermarkets cornered off non-essentials, and sanitary products were in those non-essentials. And the reason why is because of the VAT, et cetera, that's paid on them. So that's how that was, so it wasn't, in a way, it wasn't the supermarket's fault. They were just doing what they were told. So it just shows you how you think, well, it is an essential product. You know, we don't choose to have periods. You know, it's not a luxury for us to have periods. As somebody who's suffered terrible period pain throughout their lifetime, it's definitely not a luxury. So, so of course, it is completely doable. You know, politics is about the will. It's about what is your desire, passion, and will to change? What is it that you want to change? And that's what politics is about. Politics is about the will to change things. And it's been played out so starkly during the pandemic. You know, the people who the government has chosen to support, has chosen to give contracts to, you know, millions of pounds of contracts to, you know, the company that the government chose to give the contracts to deliver free school meals, you're paying the company £30 to deliver something like £3 worth of food. How does that make sense? How is that the right balance? And so really politics is about choice. It's about what is your choice? What do you choose to do? What is your passion? What do you want to achieve when you've got power? And that is to me fundamental in politics and why we don't see the rate of change that we should, because those in power are choosing to maintain the status quo because it suits them.
And a complete disregard for people that are different to them, I feel. Like, I feel they're so out of touch, as you're saying. The food that they've sent to people, it's like, could you even make a meal from that? You know, I don't, what do they, like?
They were literally sending carrot stumps and half tomatoes. It's because it was a Tory donor, apparently, the company. I was just looking on Twitter, and hopefully that was check my sources.
It is a Tory donor. I think they donated £10,000 to the Tory party.
It's insane. And then you've got like the Felix Project, that charity who goes along and collects food that isn't out of date yet, but hasn't been used. And they had like £30 worth. They did this picture of £30 worth of food. And it was like carrots and potatoes and eggs and milk and everything you could have in a week, a healthy diet, and then compared it to the Tory picture of literally some carrot stumps.
Yeah. I mean, it's shocking to think that somebody would even cut a carrot in four and
it
put in a package.
Insane.
Really, why wouldn't you just give the whole carrot? What mentality have you got that makes you cut a carrot in four pieces to give to somebody? But as you say, that just shows how out of touch and how disengaged some politicians are from reality and from society. And it takes an effort. You know, if you are very privileged, if you are okay, if you've always got food on the table and you're always warm, it takes effort to think about those who are not. It takes effort to think about those who are hungry and those who are cold. It takes effort.
But I think this is why it's important for our schools to be teaching children from an early age to care for the community. So whether it's, again, I'm maybe being like too utopian, but, fixing up the local community, going to see local hospices or helping other people in need. And that, so that from the moment that you're young, you realize that you are part of a wider thing. Because I think for now, and even me growing up, that wasn't really the case. So, if my mom hadn't taught me how to be, and if I wasn't from Kenya, where, it's all about community, you can go to anyone and get sugar, even if you're poor, you never go hungry, as in you can always go to somebody and they'll give you something. So that's something that my mom's instilled in me, and going home every year, I see that. But here, that's definitely not something I've learned in the UK. And I think it needs to come from school. You are part of a wider community, and what you do does affect other people, and what they do does affect you. And as you said earlier about, if your neighbor's fed, they won't steal and stuff like that. And not vilifying people that are poor, because this is the problem. It's like, you're poor, it's your fault. So why should we give you money? Like, we're giving you a few carrots, you should accept that. That is just a completely sad and wrong way to look at it. So let's stop vilifying people that are poor and don't have.
I think this is the problem.
They're not benefit, yeah. They're not scroungers. You know, they have this thing about scroungers. They're not scroungers. And when I used to work for the trade union, there's a big sign on the wall and it said, to make the rich work harder, you pay them more. To make the poor work harder, you pay them less.
I think this is the problem. The welfare state in this country isn't good enough. Like, you compare, I think it was David Lammy again, did a picture again, took a photo of a comparison of what the Finnish government were giving out the children and of the families that needed food during these times that couldn't otherwise afford it due to a number of reasons. And the food packages, you could just tell the welfare state in Nordic countries is better. And I think Paris, you're right. Like, children need to be taught in schools about community, but how can you even think about community if you're not, as you said before, Dawn, like warm or have any food on your table? You'd be thinking about more of like survival instinct. So it's like, I think it's how can we start educating when the welfare state isn't very good in this country and has been cut back for the last 15 years? It is really hard to feel hopeful. What do we do?
No, well, the thing is this, well, obviously we need labour in power because the welfare state is a safety blanket, and the Nordic countries have got it all right in a way. You know, they've got the taxation right, they've got the education right. You know, they are far ahead of us in so many different fields, and it's a safety blanket. And so that's the thing. And it means that everything has to flow through the mentality of we want people to be well and to succeed. And we do that at every stage. So if we say that the person at the top of, which was Labour's policy, that the person at the top of an organisation should not be paid 20 times more than the person at the bottom of the organisation, it means that everybody benefits when that organisation does well. And so, and then we say we will not give government contracts to organisations unless they are paying their employees well, and unless they have trade union recognition. It means that we help to build good employers. So we're not anti-business. We're not anti-people doing well. We're not anti-millionaires. We're just anti-bad employers and anti-poverty wage. And so, you know, once you build that, people can then afford to work. They can then afford to live because you have a real living wage, so that people are not, you know, working poor. A lot of people are working poor. Mm-hmm. And so if we do all of that, we build a better society. And so we have to talk about the whole picture rather than just saying, oh, these people, you know, don't deserve, you know, a whole carrot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dawn. I really hope the listeners are feeling as inspired as me and Paris are right now. So our next question for you is about labour. I think Paris and I agree that it's really important that we have a government that cares about people and community and is less divisive and, yeah, anyway, more inspiring. And so hopefully Labour can be that government. But then this question is about actually the gender split in politics. So while more than 50% of Labour MPs are women, which is very exciting, and Labour have always had more women than the Conservative Party, as we know, yet the disparity there is we still haven't had a female Labour leader. What are your thoughts on this? As I said, Paris and I feel very disgruntled and impassioned by this. And we know many of our listeners want to know too. We also asked a Labour activist and lawyer, Deba Saeed, a similar question on our last episode. So be interested to hear actually from a Labour MP as yourself, what you think about this and why we haven't had a Labour female leader.
I mean, it's a numbers game, right? And basically, we haven't had a Labour female leader because the members haven't voted for one. Is the reality of the answer? You know, there's been women. Well, we have had a Labour female leader. We've had Margaret Beckett. She was a leader for a short period. But yeah,
Prime Minister.
Yeah, but we do need to have. I think we would benefit from having a female leader. But I think that the Labour Party process has to completely change. I mean, at the moment, you need about £1 million to stand for an internal election, and that is completely wrong for the party. So I think the party needs to change the process. And I think once we change that process to how much money is needed, then we will be able to see a faster rate of change. Because at the moment, you know, unfortunately, people still see when they see a white man in a suit that, oh yeah, he looks like a leader, you know, and that is a problem and an issue to break that stereotype. I mean, who thought Boris would be a good leader? Do you know what I mean? It's a good laugh maybe, but he's not a good leader.
We've had two women prime ministers, right? Obviously, Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May. But like, do you think there is a link between potentially white feminism or something about conservatism where it's easier for a woman, whether you're a woman of colour or a white woman, to then progress to leadership roles? Like, can we have your thoughts about that specifically?
I mean, you know, the Tories throw it at us at every single opportunity they possibly can. You know, we've had two female prime ministers and you haven't had any. I mean, they've been in government more than we have. But yeah, they have, to their credit, they have. I mean, not that Margaret Thatcher did much for women when she was in power. So no, we're not all skin folk or kinfolk, as the saying goes. So, We do need to do better as a Labour Party. There's no shying away from that. We've had more women MPs, as you said, than the Tories, but yet still we've not had any that's been the leader of our party. And I think that's a big shame. And I think it's an embarrassment. And I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't have, because we've got some fabulous women in the party. So I'm disappointed. But as I say, I think we have to tackle the structure within the party. And then the members have to vote. I mean, the members had an opportunity to vote for a woman as their leader, and they chose not to. So it is ultimately, we do live in a democracy, and we do have a democratic process within the Labour Party. So ultimately, it is for the members to decide.
I think that's an interesting point you raise about the members, because I never actually thought of it that way. But hopefully with Kamala being in power in America, you know, hopefully that will give members more confidence to vote for women.
But isn't it interesting, though, so many people like, oh, Kamala Harris, she's so amazing. Yeah. It's great. But yet still, they're okay to praise it in America, but you don't want to praise the women who have leadership roles in the UK. You ask yourself, well, why is that? Why are you so quick to praise the women in America, but you're not quick to praise the women in the UK? Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like there are a lot of people, because I'm a Labour Party member, and I was really stuck between who to vote for because of the fact that we have this stale Etonian white dude, Boris Johnson, who's just, there's so much wrong with him, but it's like the British public are voting for him as prime minister. Who could then go up against him? Who could be like, who could actually rally against him? And literally there was a part of me thinking, could a woman, obviously she'd do a better job than all these guys, but it's like, if you vote for her as leader, would that mean that the British public would again vote for Boris Johnson, and that another 5 years or 4 years of the Tories just was like, I think that put a lot of people off when I was talking about it with friends.
Yeah, and I get that. And I get, you know, it's the same in America, you know, where they're like, well, who's going to take on Trump? Who's the best person to take on Trump? So I get that. But then again, you see, we're also assuming that our skills and abilities are not enough, because people are not going to see our skills and abilities as women for what it is, because people are going to be more comfortable looking at a man taking on, you know, another white man taking on another white man. And so sometimes people also surprise us. So sometimes we don't have to overthink it. You know, if we think somebody's good and if we like them and we think that they'll be a good leader, let's just go with it. Let's just roll with it. You know, because if we all believe in it and we talk about what it is and what we're doing and the policies are great, everybody else will. And I suppose what I'm saying is maybe we just need to be braver and have a bit more confidence.
Agree.
I think that the UK, I mean, to me, even thinking about a black prime minister here, I can't even see it, just because I feel that, you know, America's obviously got a lot of issues, but I feel that we're so scared to move on. Like, we just want to keep things as they are. And I think it's not being bold and not just going with it. And I think that, well, hopefully as time goes on and more young people in politics, more different people in politics as well, that will hopefully facilitate that. And obviously the important work and the presence that you have, Dawn, because obviously me growing up as a young black girl, you're the only one I saw, really. So I'm like, and you gave me hope to know that I can actually achieve what I want to achieve. Nobody can tell me no. But, you know, we need more people like you. You can't do it all on your own. You've done a lot and you continue to do that, but we need more representation to make people feel like this is a reality. And even the hardships that you've gone through in terms of the ridiculous racism and disgusting abuse that you've received, you still, you know, had your held high and just faced it head on. And I think we need people to say, like, even though it's going to be hard, you need to do it, you know? You're living with purpose, Dawn, and that's really inspiring for someone like me. And I know many women of colour and women in general. And I know Nina and I have spoken about you for hours on length. So yeah, you really do inspire us. But on the next question about race, which I'm really interested about. So from the beginning of the year, we've seen a big rise in the movement of Black Lives Matter and lots of people of colour just saying we've had enough. This is ridiculous. We need to have the rights and liberties that our white counterparts have. And that's not, we're not begging, and this is not like a debate. This is what we deserve. What would you know, you've done a lot of work on this, and like, what would you say the Labour Party are doing to fight systematic racism? And also how have you felt about this rise in you know, the movement of Black Lives Matter, and what's been your opinion?
Well, thank you, first of all, for the compliments. It's appreciated. Black Lives Matter has been, it's been mixed feelings, because in a way, it's traumatic, and it brings back sort of generational trauma in regards to discrimination and bullying and, you know, attacks. And as I say, I grew up with four brothers, so my, you know, it brought back some generational pain there. But it's also been empowering, because it wasn't just about Black people. Black Lives Matter is a movement, and it's a movement where it shows what happens when discrimination overflows. So it showed that Black people are discriminated against wrongly and unnecessarily. And so many people didn't understand that. And all of a sudden they were confronted with it. And we were able to say, look, this is what happens. This is what we've been talking about. We haven't got chips on our shoulders. This is actually the reality of our lives. This is what it's about. And then you saw this movement happen all over the globe, all around the globe, because people were like, this is about Black lives. It's also about injustice. Yeah. It's about injustice. And you think, well, when people say, well, all lives matter, you go, yeah, of course, we're not saying that. But the point is this: why should a Black person be stopped and searched 12 times more than their white counterpart? Why should a Black person have force used against them 5 times more than a white counterpart? And if you get this right for Black people, you will get it right for everybody. And that's the thing. So if all lives truly matter, let's get it right for Black people. Because once we get it right for Black people, we'll get it right for everybody. And that is what it's about. So I found it inspiring, because, and it made me optimistic, because it wasn't just Black people out marching. Yeah. There was everybody out marching, and everybody out marching for Black lives is powerful. You know, we need allies in this fight if we are really going to move the dial. And it's the same with women. Women can't have the fight by themselves. We need allies. We need the men to be part of the fight. I mean, domestic violence isn't going to stop with women just saying stop domestic violence. Domestic violence will stop when men also say we need to stop domestic violence. Racism against Black people will not stop if Black people just say stop discriminating against me. It will stop when white people say stop discriminating against that Black person. When white people are around the table and they hear discrimination and they call it out, you know, anti-trans, you know, rhetoric, it will stop when, you know, people who are not trans say, look, let's just stop this. So we need allies. And I always say, me fighting for my rights does not in any way diminish anybody else's rights. You know, it is not pie. Me having a slice of pie doesn't take away, you know, your bit of pie. You know, it is not pie. So fighting for other people's rights is actually very empowering. You know, sometimes when I'm feeling really kind of shit and down, I don't fight for myself. I fight for somebody else, and that gives me energy. Mm-hmm. So it's much better to fight for somebody else than it is to fight for yourself sometimes.
Yeah. And the biggest thing for me about racism, which I've faced all my life, is about the systematic racism, which is so entrenched, and it just makes me so angry and sad, because I can see it every day in the workplace. You know, I even working from home, I can see when I say something, people are like, whatever, or, you know, people being promoted and I'm not, or, you know, and I've or applying for jobs and I don't get there. And I know it's based on my color. It's nothing else to do with, and not all the time, of course, as you know, I'm not perfect, but you can just see the race, and it's hard. And even me actually saying that I'm not perfect and trying to like justify, it's basically me seeing the racism, the systematic racism I feel, but feeling like I can't really say it, because if I do say it, I sound like an angry Black woman. And people are going to be like, oh yeah, here we go. And I just don't know how we're going to fight that, because it's really hard to get people to understand that, because we're not bold enough to do that. And I feel with this, you know, Black Lives Matter movement, I am feeling a bit more bold to reflect when things happen and say like, actually, no, that is racism. Whereas before I couldn't, and I couldn't even say it in this kind of platform. I'd only say it with my Black friends and my family. And, you know, we'd have lengths being like, this happened and we know what it is. But it's really hard to translate that into something in an open forum and for people to really listen. So Dawn, how have you managed to reconcile with that when you know that somebody's really just putting you down because you're Black? It's nothing to do with your woman. It's nothing to do whether you're not educated enough, or you did something wrong, or you don't know what you're doing. It's literally because you're Black. Like, how have you... Because I think this will really inspire a lot of Black people to not feel like we have to be like, oh, I can't say that because, like, no, this is racist. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah. So it depends on the day. It depends on the mood, and it depends on the environment. So, you know, each time will be different. But I think, you know, and there'll be times when you may kick yourself because you think, oh, I should have said that. I should have tackled that. You know, I should have called them out for that. But I say, don't beat yourself up about it. But I also think it's really important. So you find the way that you find the style that suits you. So, I mean, I am not the most diplomatic person. I know that. Yeah, that there are some people that can be very diplomatic, and, you know, and I say, wow, that was smooth. You know, I'm more of a, you know, oh, that's a really interesting racist statement. You know, I'm more of that. So, but it does depend on your style. So there are times when, like, unconscious bias, some people really hate, you know, that sort of unconscious bias training. But I actually find it quite interesting, because for me, unconscious bias is basically saying, you know, you are discriminating, you are a little bit racist, right? So it's really quite interesting, because you can say to somebody, you can have a whole conversation with somebody through unconscious bias about racism without them immediately shutting down. Because sometimes moments need to be teaching moments. Sometimes you need a teaching moment. You need a learning moment, because otherwise that person will go on to do it again. So sometimes you need to hold it in to really have a learning moment and have the penny drop with the person that's discriminating against you. And so it means that you have to take them on a journey, and it takes effort. Sometimes it's worth the effort. And I would say, if you open the door with unconscious bias, you'll get more engagement than if you say you're racist.
Right.
So it depends on the environment. Sometimes I want to just shut somebody down, and instead of cussing, because I can't cuss because that's not becoming of an MP. Some MPs can get away with cussing, by the way. Generally not MPs of colour, but some MPs can get away with cussing, and people say, oh, look, she's just being real. But if a Black MP does it, it's like, oh, she's so crass, oh my God, she should be, no. Anyway, that's for another day. But so instead of swearing, I would say, do you know that it's racist? Or like the angry Black woman, I say, that is a, do you know, or do you realise that is a well-known anti-Black trope? And using like the trope, you know, to let them know it's a well-known anti-Black trope stops people in their tracks. And then you can talk them through why it's a, well, and it helps. So it helps bring in different bits of language into it, you know, unconscious bias. Do you realize that's an unconscious, but do you realize what you've just done? Or I say to people, what you've just said, this is how it's made me feel. And so it kind of, you know, there's a almost a palpable pause when I say that, you know, what you've just said, this is how it's made me feel. And then I tell them how it's made me feel.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you kind of, yeah, bring them on that journey. So it just really does depend on your mood, on your environment. And the other thing I'd say is, it's really hard sometimes when you're the only Black person in the room. And that's why we need allies, because it's hard when you're the only Black person in the room and you're having to take it on. So that's why we need allies. And the other thing is, when you are the only one in the room, whether you're the only Black person in the room or the only woman in the room, my thing for every year, I have a theme. Last year was supposed to be embracing your awesomeness, but I didn't get around to doing it through COVID, but I'm going to try and develop it this year. The thing is now is to own it. So instead of being intimidated by it, own it, own it. So you own it in everything that you say. In every breath that you take, you own it. You say, I am the only woman in the room and I'm going to do this because I am the only woman in the room. So everybody's watching me. So instead of thinking everyone's watching me and everyone's putting me down, you say, everybody's watching me and I'm going to give you something to watch. Everybody's listening to what I'm saying and I'm going to give you something to listen to. And just embrace it that way and just build your internal kind of resolve and strength. But I also say to people, you know, your racism isn't my problem. Mm. It's your problem. Mm. You got to deal with it.
Dawn, thank you so much. That ties in really well to our last question. And obviously this is the name of the podcast, which is The Feminist Lens. So we analyse the world through the feminist lens. So how would you change the world? I think you have already just answered it through the feminist lens.
So I think in society, how we look at GDP and growth and economy and what works and what doesn't work. If we do this through the feminist lens, if we do this through women, so if we focus all of our policies through government, if we focus all of our policies through the lens of women, we will make better policies. We will see a better and bigger and stronger economy if we do it through the lens of women. So if every single policy you say, how will that affect women? We will end up with better policies. We don't do that at the moment. It's not seen as something that's considered or even important to do, but like the Fawcett Society has really good papers around this. But if we do everything through the lens of women, and I mean, we changed, for instance, when Labour was in power in 97, we changed the way the NHS worked. And you used to die if you had a cancer diagnosis. But because we focused it around women, it meant that when people were diagnosed with cancer, you now can live with it. And that was a real big change. So how we budget the economy, how we look at, you know, you take anything, you take schools, you know, you make the school work through the lens of women at the fore, schools will work better, education, but with the workplace, take the workplace, you look at the policies of the workplace through the feminist lens of making sure that you elevate women, that women can work and raise a family if they want to, you'd get a better workplace. You get a workplace that works for everybody, flexible working, a workplace that works for everybody.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
So again, Dawn, yeah, thank you so much for your time and the knowledge and experience that you've shared with us. I think it's really been an eye-opener for us, especially about, you know, voting in Labour Party to hopefully see more women. And just your experience, because I think that's really inspirational. And for me and Nina, just to see kind of your journey, what you've gone through and how you've managed to just keep yourself, you know, brace with, you know, when really, you know, you were in your right to just go off, but you haven't. And I think that's a lesson that we haven't really seen with the Trump administration and the Boris administration, to see that you should always rise above and be a good leader and think about the interests of everybody. And that's what you've done through your whole history and your work. So really inspired.
And for Labour leader.
But I, you know what, it's funny. I always say I would never want to be, like, not because I couldn't, because I'm tired and I haven't got the energy. But I realise that's not very inspiring to say that. But I also say, like, you know, like own it. But I want to change the system. And that's the most important thing to me, is changing the system. It's fundamental. You shouldn't need £1 million to stand for, you know, Labour leaders. An internal election. That £1 million could be used for good.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And we're supposed to be the Labour Party.
Yeah. And I think women do it, but I mean, we can see Jacinta in New Zealand, you know, and the, oh. I can't remember what her name is, in Barbados, the way they think, which is exactly what you're saying, thinking more holistically. And so that's where we do have to lean on our, as women, we are, you know, we do think about the whole family, not
with
just
empathy.
And that's just the way we are. And that's just a fact. So I think that's a very important consideration for all of us to think about when we're next voting, even in our own constituents who we're voting for. So thank you so much. I know you're really busy and you've got to shoot off. So yeah, thank you again. And
thank you so much, Dawn.
Again,
it's a pleasure, Neil and Paris. Actually, I'm going to end with a quote from John Lewis for you.
Okay.
Do not get lost in a sea of despair. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. We used to say that ours is not the struggle of one day, one week, or one year. Ours is the struggle of a lifetime, or even many lifetimes. And every one of us from every generation must do our part. And if we believe in the change that we seek, then it's easy to commit to doing all we can. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble, because the responsibility is ours alone to build a better society and a more peaceful world.
I'm going to cry. Incredible. Thank you so, so, so much, Dawn. Anything we can do offline, please do let us know, as well as online.
Take care. Nice to meet you.
Woo! She is incredible.
Oh my God.
Let them get you wet. Strut your high heels in that dress and move. The money must see that you are the best. Don't want any girl that's less. They can tell that you are blessed. So move. Cause you're busy just a rocket, rocket. And then you're ticking and you're tucking, tucking. You put the plug in and it's sucky, sucky. Electric just a pop it, pop it, pop it, pop it. Girl, you want it, money. You bring the fire just a bunny, bunny. Party shutting and you're done it, done it. We're flying and you're done it. Done it, 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 done it